I received a letter a couple of weeks ago congratulating me on my 21 continuous years as a season ticket holder for Huddersfield Town, which probably just confirms what most of you think about me in the first place. The last time I saw my own local heroes play was 2 weeks ago at home to Birmingham City when they fought out a glorious 3-1 defeat. And it happened to coincide with Remembrance Weekend. Huddersfield Town currently have 2 Northern Ireland internationals playing for them. That's how bad Huddersfield Town are. But they were wearing specially commissioned shirts, which included an embroidered poppy. This has become a fairly, in the years I've been going, taking on more and more presence year by year. In fact, Birmingham City were wearing the same shirts. All Premier League teams have been doing it for several years, and they're usually raffled afterwards or sold afterwards. Money goes to the British region. And it's become a very, very central part of popular culture because, for example, at that game, the ball was delivered by, the match ball was delivered by paratroopers. And there were Afghani veterans displayed at halftime. And it's become a very deeply ingrained part of popular culture in Britain, to the point where now all 92 professional football teams do it, and every single professional footballer wears a poppy embroidered shirt. Apart from the year before, when one player in the entire football league didn't, and his name was James McLean, and he refused to do it. He plays for Sunderland. He's an interesting history. He started off as a Northern Ireland junior, and then he now plays for the Republic. The same weekend, some bright spark decided that an interesting fixture in the Irish League would be for Linfield to play Cliftonville. An even brighter spark decided that Linfield at home were going to observe a 2-minute silence before the game. And that was disrupted by sections of the Cliftonville support. So I just thought, I was just thinking about that, and I think it's a very clear reminder that in Ireland and within the Irish diaspora, commemoration about World War One remains inseparable from broader ethno-sectarian national political divisions. As there are at least 3 eminent historians in the room, this isn't really about history pure. What I want to talk about is memory. I want to try and distinguish in the way that Dominic began to point to differences between history and memory. In particular, I want to try and point out about how particular memories are constructed around World War One, and in particular the Somme and the 36th Division. Just as a side background, I mean there were around 200,000 people men joined the British Army to fight in the First World War. And I suppose one of the things that happened is the subsequent commemorations and the subsequent popular memory of those people have differed vastly. That was compounded by partition, and it was also compounded by the efforts of both states to build distinctive and mutually exclusive identities, including very much the experiences of the war. And it's been further complicated, I guess, by the new UVF, the post-1966 UVF, claiming ownership of part of those memories and direct links to the 36th Ulster Division and so on. So I want to talk about I really haven't got time. I'm going to flag up a few things. I want to talk about issues to do with remembering, issues to do with forgetting, the difference between history and memory, and how those feed into to the constructions of collective memory and collective identities. And when we were talking earlier on, Paul, about PUL and stuff, I mean, I accept what you're saying. Maybe one of the ways we could look at it is the frame of memories and reference points that particular section of the community returns to again and again to construct their sense of identity. So I just want to flag up that there are several. I'm a sociologist as well, so I mean there are several processes that we can point to. We talk quite a lot about remembering in this context, but actually just as important is forgetting. And that's something that I'm going to try and demonstrate how certain memories are chosen and prioritised above others. But that also means that certain memories are forgotten or are excluded as well in this construction of identity. And again, picking up very much on something Dom just said, this is about past, present and future. These commemorative acts are acts that have to be people have to partake in them as well. They're not kind of dead things. So I'm not going to talk very much about official memories. That's our own cenotaph at Belfast City Hall. That's actually a commemoration to the fallen in Colney Street Station in Dublin. And sometimes I'm aware that they official and other areas of civil society overlap. So the Grand Lonely Lords Band every 12th of July, that's the officers of the Belfast County at the cenotaph of every 12th of July. But I want to try and focus more on organic growth and growth on the streets. But I do think that this is important. I do think that if we are going to understand memory, it's very often about a memory which is used to explain the present rather than the past. And by way of shorthand, this is kind of an idealised notion of memory within the Protestant Unionist Loyalist community. Thorndyke Street is in East Belfast. It's about 150 foot long of a mural, and it picks out some of the key points in Protestant Unionist Loyalist memory. Oops. We are talking about selection, but this is kind of idealised loyalist worldview. If you like, it begins with flagging up the Ulster Scots connection, Cromwell, the Siege of Derry, the Orange Order, the Home Rule Crisis, Battle of the Somme, the sectarian Irish Republican campaign, the 74 workers' strike, the B specials clue in place, and then an end mural, which is about loyalty to Queen and country. And that's how the events around World War I are portrayed. That's a reproduction of a poster that was actually around at the time. It's interesting because it's actually one of the few images of women in the loyalist iconography as well. That's around. And that's a member of the YCB, but over the top in the trenches and underneath the Better the Grave Than Slavery and there's the question. It's interesting how they frame that themselves. I can find the right bit of paper, I'll tell you how they frame it themselves. I can't. But they directly relate that to events of the current day, and this is a continuous, this is one of the things in the way that memory is used, it's a continuous weave right from Cromwell through to Clun Place, which is one of the interface areas in East Belfast, through to events of today and beyond, as I'll try and show in a few seconds. And the other thing we've had is a whole series of organic commemorations around 36 Ulster Division and the Battle of the Somme. It's almost impossible to overstate the centrality the Battle of the Somme has in loyalist consciousness. It has become their focal point. Very much, I mean, Andy and I were lucky enough to go to the Anzac commemoration a couple of years ago to be invited out, and in the same way as Gallipoli has become central to that narrative, the Somme has become central to the loyalist narrative. Incidentally, just when we're at Anzac, it's interesting because a lot of these processes I could see out there as well, because Anzac starts off as a very formal day. We start off by going to the ceremony before dawn. Then we went to another ceremony, then we went to Canberra, and then we went to the French Embassy, and there are all a series of really major events during the day, and then it kind of descends into a lot of amber nectar and it gets a bit rowdy. But one of the things I took great pleasure in pointing out was that the first three waves of soldiers at Suvla Bay was the 10th Irish Division. And they were all, the slaughter that took place in the first three waves was more intense than what followed. And it's entirely been written out of the Anzac history. Entirely been written out of it. I mean, it was greeted with, it was actually greeted with some hostility when I began to point this out. So the processes I'm talking about are common across lots of examples of commemoration, and there's lots of examples of these popping up around the city, around the 36th Ulster Division, and again that's a, you can't read it, it's a telegram home saying that someone's been killed, and images from the trenches. One of the other things that's happening, of course, is ownership of these memories is being contested. And it's been contested by contemporary UVF, PUP, stroke groupings by and large. And in quite interesting ways. And there's certainly, a bit of evidence that the commemoration and rituals that we're seeing today are actually more about the contemporary than the past. I'll try and give an example of that in a second. Paul already has shown some images of this. These are the commemorative marches around the centenary of the Covenant and the centenary of the formation of the UVF. I find it really interesting not what was being included in that story, because it's a fairly standardised story of the movement, but actually what was being excluded from that story. And so you get this direct linkage, increasing linkage between, for want of a better term, the old UVF and the new UVF. So these are two. That's two officers from the 1914 UVF, and these are two UVF members who were killed in the 1970s and 1980s, respectively. And that link's been made all the time. So here you have 36th Ulster Division on the Western Front, and there you have actually an image of Gusty Spence in Longcash. And the narrative that's been constructed around it is one where this is seen as a seamless understanding of history. And that's just, I mean, that's very typical of the UVF PUP group and have their own commemorations. And that's very typical of the type of speech that's made at it. But I chose it because I thought it was a particularly good example. The Ulster Volunteer Forces of Political Army, that's the old UAF. Leadership took Alison Carson, Craig, other unionist leaders, and then immediately we're into today, the volunteers and political leaders. Today, we face the same enemy. My British citizen impressed me because it was bought at a great price, and back to the notion of blood sacrifice at the Somme and on the fields of Flanders. And so that particular political memory is deeply ingrained. And that kind of sets part of the background for what we're talking about, culture war. I'm always getting embarrassed when I put people in, two people out there, I don't know who they are. I'm sure David still may or may not remember saying this, but he did, honestly.
I said on the paper, I must have said it.
But John, myself and Andy did a very large project with the Orange Order over the last few years, and that was you were the first people that we knew personally. You were the first people that actually started using the term culture wars that I'd come across in a coherent way. So I guess certainly within that part of the Protestant Unionist Alliance community, it's been around for some time. And this is Edward Carson's, and not Edward Carson, you like that one, Edward Stevenson's Grandmaster's speech this year. And I thought it was interesting around the flags because at some level what they're also reproducing is this notion of a collective memory and a collective identity being passed on from generation to generation. So, part of what they're saying is we will not be the generation to fail Ulster. And I'm going to end with a quote from Salman Rushdie. I think it's important just to say that because these are sometimes historically inaccurate, and because these are selective, and because these exclude memories as well as into them, doesn't mean they're any less meaningful to the people who hold those beliefs. And I like that quotation from Salman Rushdie. I've told the truth, I say it again, memory is truth. Memory is its own special kind. It selects, it alters, it exaggerates, glorifies, vilifies, and so on. But in the end, no sane human being ever trusts someone else's version more than his own. And I think that's can be applied to the whole, or to large sections of the loyalist community in terms of the political and collective memory. Thank you.